All righty, welcome aboard. It's Bear Facts and Fishtails. Mark and Larry here on a beautiful Sunday night. We're glad you're along with us, and we've got a great show planned ahead for you. Tonight we're going to, at about 7:30, have the opportunity to speak with, and we're very pleased about it, DNR Commissioner Sarah Strauman will be on with us at 7:30 tonight, and we'll be talking about how that, basically, Lair, how that first year in the hot seat has been, and as some have said, she's a cool hand in the hot seat. So, great to have, we're honored to have Commissioner Sarah Strauman on tonight.
I'm looking forward to it. I have one question I want to ask her. I will be succinct.
Didn't get that, buddy.
I said I do have one question I want to make sure I want to ask her.
Oh, okay.
You know. Anyway, it was a very, very cold day up here today.
Really?
Very cold. Yes, it was 18 below this morning. The sun is out, or came out all day, and it got up to about 10.
Oh, what a way to start the day, you know? The other day, I took a picture of the temperature readout on my truck, and I sent it down to my buddy in Florida, Scotty, and I said, I hope you're enjoying your day.
There you go.
This is a heck of a start, and it was like minus 8.
Put a wrinkle in his day. Let him know that the world is suffering.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's okay. So you've been out. Did you check about with the other souls that were on the ice, or did you leave it to yourself to follow a dismal trail, or did it get good?
I'm still scared. But I did talk to a guy that claims there was no slush on Rainy Lake, geez. And I have some doubts, but he said what I thought would happen sooner or later with the wind and the snow, the crust on top. So I'm looking forward to, it's going to be warming up, I think, on Friday.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
You know, it looks like it. All week is going to be kind of nasty for me to go out on a snowmobile and take my fish house out there by my lonesome. But I'm looking forward to this weekend, finally. I think I'll be able to fish by myself relatively safely on mighty Rainy Lake.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
Looking for, I want to find them big crappies.
There you go.
Brother Butch. Yeah.
Without having to go across the other side.
Well, I'm going to. That's the deal. I have to go.
Yeah.
I probably have to go into the Canadian waters.
Yep.
Which means I'll be a little farther from, to walk. If I break down, you know, I might have to walk a little farther.
Well, just remember, if it all goes in a handbasket, just strike the proverbial pose. And it's been good knowing you, Lair.
How'd you shoot a flare up for you? I'll shoot a flare.
Do you bring flares with you up there?
Marky. I got them in my boat.
Well, I know you got them in your boat, but do you take them with in your snowmobile?
No, I do not.
Okay. I just wondered.
I also don't do a lot of things we tell other people to do about safety.
Well, I know that.
You know.
I've seen it.
I don't wear my life jacket on my snowmobile, although it's not a dumb idea.
Yeah.
No, if I had the money... You know, I mean, you know, I'm retired, you know. I'm on a fixed income.
I'm on a fixed income. Everybody's on a fixed income, no matter what they make. Go ahead.
I'd probably buy a float coat, damn it.
Well, you know, they might need a test guy, you know.
Well, maybe one day Rapala will put them in a catalog.
So you never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just don't know. But obviously, it's too bad when you hear that there's stories of slush up there, though. Jeez. And Rainy Lake, there is so much current flowing through that lake.
You got a guy. Butch has been getting on local lakes. In fact, I talked to him today, and I talked to him for 10 minutes, and during that time, he whacked five sunfish.
Oh, nice.
On a secret lake.
Well, of course.
Near Lake Mille Lacs.
Yeah.
And he says they were bringing wheelhouses out on that lake. And also, you know, Sullivan, Platt and Sullivan
Lake. Yep.
There was a bunch of wheelhouses on that lake last weekend or the weekend before.
Man.
They're invading everything.
They are. Well, you know, to some degree, I've heard tales of organizations and clubs and groups that get together and they rally on certain bodies of water. So it's not unlike, you know, other organized sports that have arms of certain entities that like to get together and socialize. And when you do look at the wheelhouse situation, it's evolved in so many different ways from being, as we've said so many times, not only just an ice fishing shelter, but a camping shelter, a hunting shack, a family, just it's an all-around, all-year-long family recreational mobile vehicle.
But you want to talk about taking a hit, all right? Let's just say this.
Yes.
The good news is the fact that some of these lakes are travelable. You know, if I lived down there, I'd be... But anyway, that's the good news. So ice fishing definitely isn't taking that big of a hit.
Right.
I mean, you can, you know. Now, my point is this, okay? When you get a good sunfish or crappie bite, especially sunfish, because, in fact, in Outdoor News and the Roundtable, it's brought up, you know, always trying to preserve these big sunfish spots. It was bad enough, but when you're invaded by wheelhouses, now you really don't have a lot of room left to cut a hole. It used to be one guy in a hole or two. Now you got a wheelhouse that could be 20 feet long. You can't cut a hole right next to that. I mean, come on.
All of a sudden, they've got the spot legitimately.
Completely.
Literally.
Covered. If it's a one hole in the lake, and a lot of these lakes are that, they go one hole, they'll have that covered up, and instead of 50 guys with small fish houses, there's like 10 wheelhouses that take up the whole thing.
Yep.
So is that something to think about?
Well, I'm sure it has been talked about. I would venture to guess strongly, yes. You know, but the funny thing about it is when you put it in retrospect, years ago when we'd go out in one-man shelters, whether we made them or purchased them, I mean, we were really striking out large with the flasher and, oh my gosh, your fishing rod has a spinning reel on it, you know. All of a sudden, we're down to we're driving expensive wheelhouses out with the, you know, pulling your kitchen and living room all in one, and it's a fun deal, but... Yeah, it's changing the complexion, but you know, somebody would pull up alongside of you when you're in your little trap and say, "Hey, do you mind if I drill a hole 20 feet over here?" And you'd kind of go, "Well, what the heck? You made the trek out, yeah? What the heck? It's okay, you know, no big deal. Thanks for asking, you know that type of deal."
No,
but yeah, it's really now it's like a parking lot.
You buy your whole living room out here.
I know. You got it all. Yeah. Then Larry's getting hungry and he's knocking on the door like a bear looking for a cheese puff, you know.
Well, it's okay if you're related to me.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
I got a place I can warm up.
I am a, you know, that kind of guy.
Well, folks, this is a fishing show. You're listening to Bear Facts and Fish Tales on the Mighty Bob Radio Network. Actually, the Mighty Bob 106.1 radio network. And we invite your phone calls at 763-450-0100. And we're talking about fishing and we're talking about everything that affects us pretty much in the outdoor world. And we invite your participation for sure. So lots of stuff going on. Go ahead, Larry.
Well, and also we talk about... since spring is going to come, anything coming up like a planned trip or equipment,
yep,
you know, all that kind of stuff. We can talk about summer fishing as well.
Absolutely.
You're going to take a trip to a lake you've never been to.
Mm-hmm.
We can lie and tell you whether the lake is good
all
or bad.
All of it, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I like how Mark kind of teased us last week with you know, saying that he picked up the new boat.
Yeah.
That's fun.
You know, and in fact, I finished up. I can't believe it. This is the earliest ever I have paid my sales tax, registered, licensed. It's all done. I'm ready to go. All I have to do is wash it and rig it, you know. But it's a great feeling.
Take your time.
Yeah, exactly.
Just kind of don't be in a hurry, because otherwise you'll sit for another month just driving yourself crazy.
Absolutely.
Run out of things to do, yeah.
I'm just going to take it really slow this time. So it's a good feeling, and lots of people are getting fired up. I mean, boat sales from the last sports show, I heard everybody did extremely well. So, you know, with that means the antillary gear that goes along with it, electronics, trolling motor. Folks, if you need information on battery chargers, we can talk the whole line of getting your boat ready and pointing you in the right direction of where to go get it rigged.
Yeah, because we've made all the mistakes there are to make, including drilling a hole right through a boat.
Yes. You know, only to find out when you're trying to wash it that there's a reason the rag stops.
You didn't know why. What was that thing that was there? And you kept and maybe four or five times washing it where the rag kind of got stuck there. The fifth time you looked in there was a hole there.
Yeah.
And guess who put it there?
Go ahead, Larry. Finish off your story. Do you know the guy? Yes.
And then he took a penny and fiberglassed it on the inside to plug up the hole. And the guy when that guy sold that boat to a guy who came in his garage looking at it, he immediately felt it was right underneath the gunnel. He immediately found that hole.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't get a discount.
It happens.
He went out the door with his tail between his legs. Well, he took the boat.
Yeah.
So that's the way that works. And, of course, that guy was a very experienced angler, probably was 50 years old, and not real handy with tools, but has rigged his own boats here and there over the years. And
oh, yeah.
He's a very experienced guy. Matter of fact, he's a very experienced guy, and I'm not going to tell you who he was.
But he lives in International Falls, that one?
I think he lives there now, and he's almost 78 years old any day now.
You know...
That one.
One of the other favorite stories we've shared on the air is our good buddy Paul from Grays Bay Marina, the original Grays Bay Marina, the little tiny resort right there on the 101 bridge and on the property. Remember the place that used to restore old boats? They would, if you had a bad piece of wood and a Chris Craft, they would take it out and replace it for you. Well, it turned out that long story short, that somebody was going to save some money that went in to get a bid. It was too expensive, and it just turned out to be somebody that was, quote-unquote, in their neighborhood. So the guy chose to replace the strips of wood himself and put the boat on his own lift and jacked it up and let the wood dry and did all the processes and replaced the bows on the inside. And when he got all done, he was proud of it, and it was all varnished and ready to be deployed and launched off the boat lift, only that the boat wouldn't pop off the lift, and it stayed attached to the lift because the guy put multiple screws from the inside going to the outside and screwed the boat right to the boat lift.
You know, that's not so
true
bad.
Story.
It's just for show and tell, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't going to put it in the water anyway, right?
Apparently.
Do I know the guy?
No, okay. Neither one of us do. Thank goodness, I think I would honestly have to break out laughing every time I would idle out on the bridge, under the bridge, and head out to the main lake, and it would be, I don't know if I could control myself. I would feel so bad.
I wonder, you know, Joe Souchere, it could have been him, because he was into restoring his own boats.
Yes. Yes. Oh, well.
Sounds like something that could happen to me.
It goes. But that's how you learn. As you said, you know, if you don't try, you don't make mistakes. And if you don't make mistakes, you don't learn. So it's all in the course of moving along. Anyhow, well, lots of stuff happening. Today I witnessed, before I took off, Lair, to come to the station, having something for dinner, and I was looking out in the backyard, and there were eight deer that came walking out of the woods and got to the edge, and I was waiting to see if I could see this chunky little buck He's about a year old. And because I had noticed that last week when I saw him, and then again this week earlier, I saw where he was, he had his muzzle right into the snow, right on the edge of my lawn going into the tamarack slough. And I was watching him, and he was digging, and I'll be dang if he wasn't there for like 45 minutes in just a small, tight little area. And so today, when that little group of eight came through, they ran down to my neighbor who's feeding them, and they ran down the line, and this little guy hung back. And all of a sudden, when everybody was gone, he almost did the double back and went right to that spot. So do you think... I was just thinking to myself, he's got to be, was he being clever, waiting until the other deer split and then double backed on him?
To eat?
Yes.
Something special in the
yes.
snow?
Yes,
yes. That sounds like a trick I would have played on you.
Exactly.
You know,
but
if you were out in a separate boat and you saw me fishing.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
But I just thought, you know, that was really cool. Did I just witness something in nature where this he just duped the rest of the herd? Kind of interesting.
Well, let's just say yes.
Yeah, I like it.
Because this is Bambi Land, you know, Walt Disney film, you know.
Sure. All the above. The only thing that was missing was the thumper, you know. There you go.
Yeah.
All right, with that, we're going to run for a short pause. You're listening to Bear Facts and Fish Tales, Mark and Larry, here on a beautiful Sunday night. Inviting your phone calls at 763-450-0100. And Larry's broadcasting live from International Falls, Minnesota. I'm down here in our beautiful Ramsey, Minnesota studios. We'll take a short pause and be right back.
You're tuned in to Bear Facts and Fish Tales with Hall of Fame fisherman Mark Fisher and Larry Bowling on Bob Outdoors. If you missed any of the show, click on mybobcountry.com under the weekend tab to listen to all the archived shows.
The best showcase of Minnesota bucks under one roof is back. The Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic is coming March 13th, 14th, and 15th to Canterbury Park in Shakopee. See Michael Waddell and Nick Munt from TV's Bone Collector. Get your antlers scored and visit with over 150 exhibitors. Plus, there's the Wild Trails Kid Zone. Parking is free at the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic. Now at the new location, Canterbury Park in Shakopee. March 13th, 14th, and 15th. Learn more at mndeerclassic.com. That's mndeerclassic.com.
Here is Sir Lawrence of Bowling for Vexilar.
They've been around for over 60 years. I can't believe how time flies. And I know my first ever three-color flasher was an FL8, and I still have it. It still works. And right now I'm using the top of their line, which is an LX28. Now, you got to go online at Vexilar.com because they don't have everything they sell. They're not in retail stores, everything. Lots of stuff is, but not everything. Now, they have a whole line of ice fishing flashers, okay, from the FLX28 all the way down to the FL8. All of them do a great job. You heard the Grizz say, and Davey Gents, he doesn't leave home without his Vexilar. And you know what? It's not too late. Now, when you go online and see what they have to offer, they also offer accessories. As an example, my unit, the FLX28, has an automatic depth range with a digital readout. It's got a five-color combination. I can select my color, whatever is best for me. But the rest of them are all three-color flashers with different, you know, ranges, etc. You can buy an accessory called a glow ring, which you can attach to your unit, and you can use it to charge your fluorescent lures, or you can get a DD100, which will plug into your FL8, your old unit, and it will have a digital readout. They're a local company down in Bloomington, Minnesota. You can call them at 952-884-5291 or go online, vexilar.com. And by the way, they sell reconditioned unit also. So don't leave home without your Vexilar.
Dreaming of a new home? The State Bank of Faribault can help with a $7,500 grant. For a limited time, qualified borrowers might be eligible for a up to $7,500 grant towards costs of the purchase of a new home with State Bank of Faribault. To find out if you are eligible, talk with the mortgage team at one of their two locations in Faribault or their new location in Prior Lake. The State Bank of Faribault, creating customers for life. Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC. and MLS number 638054. This is not an offer to enter into a rate lock agreement.
The ice will melt soon. Get out and fish in a premium sleeper ice house from Minnesota Recreation Rentals. Select premium ice houses are available on Brainerd area lakes for just $175 a night, Sunday through Thursday, or on weekends, buy two nights at a third for half price. Take advantage of these low prices now. Limited availability. Reserve now at icefishmn.com. For best availability and these special rates, reserve now at icefishmn.com.
Let's get back to the important stuff. Bear Facts and Fishtails. Join the conversation by calling 763-450-0100 right now.
All righty, we're back. Bear Facts and Fishtails. Mark and Larry here. Glad you're along with us, inviting your phone calls at 763-450-0100. And shortly here at 7:30, we're privileged to have Commissioner, DNR Commissioner, Sarah Strauman live with us for a little bit of conversation this evening. And Brandon, you said we have a caller, sir.
We do. It's our good buddy, Tom Newstrom.
Tommy.
Well, guys, I'm gonna be on there with you for a few minutes anyway when the commissioner calls. So
good
that'll
deal.
Be fun. We'll have a good time with it.
Good deal, buddy. So
I was just at a show, Duluth Sports
right.
Molten Travel Show. I mean, it's a great little show out of Duluth, put on by the Murphy Brothers. And I think that right now, you know, when you start getting into all these different shows, it was nice to see people out looking around, not just kicking tires, but buying boats and kind of, you know, excited. I mean, I think people, it was kind of a bad ice season this year. So I think it generates a little bit more enthusiasm about the boat, boat stuff. And
yeah,
people were buying,
yeah.
They're buying it.
It's amazing. It's amazing. You know, a lot of folks are saying maybe that participation and attendance may be down at some of the shows, but people are still coming in, so they're attracting the right crowds.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
So it's so important.
I got to tell you, Larry, I got a question. I got one for you. When the commissioner gets on, ask her how many Vexlars she has.
Oh, she has them, huh?
I just ask her. That'll be a ace card in the hole.
Uh-huh.
Ask her how many Vexlars does she have.
All right, I will.
I got an
email from Gene and Renee Hansen, who run Agate Bay up there, and they got a list of questions they want me to ask the commissioner, but there's too many of them, but I'm going to ask her. I'm boiling them down in my mind, and I'm going to ask her one question.
Mm.
So we'll see what happens here. But anyway, it got me thinking about Mille Lacs and how important an issue that really is. And I don't know what she can do about it. But anyway, that I got a question for her, and I can't wait to see how she answers it.
Okay.
Well, it'll be good. We got a lot of things going on in the state of Minnesota, obviously, that need some attention. So, at least finding out if we're putting the right foot forward and getting the right support and that sort of things, because it's not one person running the whole operation. You know, that's the precarious part. So it'll be good. So Tommy, what else has been happening up there? What's the ice fishing reports like up there?
Well, we're starting to get, guys are getting out. They're not driving vehicles, that's for sure. But they're getting out on snow machines, side by side,
yep.
On a lot of the area lakes. The slush isn't as bad as it was. So, guys are getting out. And, the season's over next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And for walleyes and northern pike, so unless you go up to Lake of the Woods. But it's pretty much done. But
yeah.
The pan should be good. But guys are getting out. And I think, I think that's the important thing. But as far as taking pickups out on the ice, that's not an option right now in our area.
Right.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
There's not as much ice as people think there is.
Well,
Lake Woods there is,
yeah.
And rain is, but there's not, up in our area, there is not as much ice as we normally get.
Is a consistency on one body of water, is it differing from one part of the lake to the other and not as uniformed?
Oh, yeah. And in lakes, it's interesting. Some of the lakes, like Wabana, doesn't have as much ice as they normally would. Mm. Deer Lake doesn't have as much ice as they normally would. You know, they got the ice. We got a lot of snow. Then you got the slush between the snow and the slush to insulate it. So you didn't get that chance for it to really get, you know, thicker like it normally would be.
Yep.
So I think, and, you know, Winnie's got pretty decent ice underneath the snow and that, and they're starting to plow a few roads, but there's still a lot of slush out there. And I know High Banks, Rick and Kim are doing a great job in getting their people out.
Good.
And, you know, so, I mean, there is stuff that's turning around. It's just too bad it's down towards the end of the season for the walleyes and the northern pike. But I think the pan fishing will be really good here in the next couple months. So, you know, it's one of those things. Don't put away your ice stuff yet. But, if you enjoy pan fishing, I mean, what the heck, it's going to be available.
Oh, yeah. And as everybody used to say years ago, the best perch fishing is yet to come in March, and put on the tall rubber boots and away you go.
Oh.
So, all right. Well, our guest is with us, and we would like to welcome Commissioner to the DNR, Sarah Strom, and thank you for calling in, Commissioner.
Yeah, my pleasure. Good evening.
Well,
how many Vexlars do you have?
More than I'm going to admit to on the radio.
Oh, why? Because we think you're too rich? Is that what it is?
No. It may or may not be more than people I have in my household.
Uh-oh.
I'll say that.
Well, that's a good sign. That's a real good sign. Well, go ahead, guys. I have only one question for you. I'll wait a while before I ask it.
All right.
Madam Commissioner, can I call you Madam Commissioner, or should I call you Sarah the Commissioner, or just Commissioner?
I'll leave that up to you, I guess.
Okay. All right.
Well, what's been fun is watching, honestly, is watching what's happened in this past year. What is it? It'll be a year in March, correct? Since you've taken office, is that about right?
It was a year last January.
Last January.
Been in the job about a year and a month now. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I suppose the easiest thing to start off with is is it what your expectations were going to be in this role going into it? Did you see the battles laying out in front of you? Did you see the separation of points of view? Is it as good as you thought it would be, or more difficult than you thought it would be?
I don't know if I had a real developed expectation going into this. I mean, obviously, I came into it having been in the DNR and having watched the prior commissioner do his job. So, I think I had a pretty good idea. I spent a lot of this last year traveling. That maybe was a little bit more than I expected, but it was great because we have a big state, we have a great state, our resources are diverse, and so I really enjoyed that time with people all across the state, talking about our resources, enjoying our resources, hearing what's on people's mind, and I really am enjoying the job. It's a great job, and I wouldn't have traded any day of it so far.
You know, is the honeymoon over then?
I'm still grateful to be here. There's no doubt that there are tough issues ahead of us, but we know that in this business, and Minnesotans are really passionate about our natural resources, and they don't all share the same view. But I think the silver lining of that is people care. You know, I think we'd be a lot worse off if people didn't care. So I'll take the passionate differences over indifference any day.
Yeah. Do you think the people overall are pretty prepared when they focus on their one single point of view on a hardline topic, whether it's CWD or AIS, or certainly moving towards special regs that we have, whether it's limited to species or we're going to reduce limits, as some discussion has been made with the bluegill situation in the state of Minnesota, reducing from 20 to 10 on you know, 100 right. lakes or so. And, you know, there's a lot of great conversation and good topics there. Do you think that the people that come forth with their point of view are really, really aware of or have a deep knowledge of, say, those fisheries, or really understand what's going on, or is it just pretty much hearsay?
You know, I think a lot of the folks that engage, you know, do understand the issue. There's a lot of personal experience. I think sometimes, mm-hmm. though, people bring, you know, and that's human. We all do it. We bring our own experience. And so, you know, someone else may bring a different personal experience. And so I think what's really important is to make sure we're having conversations across those different personal mm-hmm. experiences to get a better sense of the full spectrum of perspectives and opinions and experiences, and then combine that experience that people have and what, you know, we as anglers might be seeing mm-hmm. As we're out, and combine that with the science and the data that, you know, our fisheries folks have mm-hmm. as well.
Okay, now it's my turn. I have an email here from Dean and Renee Hansen on Agate Bay. I don't know, have you ever met those people up there?
I have met them, yes.
Okay,
yep,
and they're good people. So that's good. That's very good. And it's a list of seven questions, and I'm not going to ask all seven, but I boiled it down. I've been thinking a great deal about this, and let me just explain where a lot of us anglers. Now, I haven't fished Mille Lacs for 15 years, okay? But I've got thousands of hours on the lake over the years. And in the old days, we'd fish down to fish a little bit, and then the next year they wouldn't bite, and we had the 6 walleye limit, and then they went to the 20-inch and all that stuff. And, of course, with the treaty and the bans and the DNR battling each other, I just have one personal question, or not personal, that I've been dying to ask, just directly. The DNR usually wants to harvest more than the bans. Am I correct? Usually the DNR wants more than they end up getting. Is that correct or not?
I think it's dependent on the year a little bit. I mean, I will yeah. say this year we went in with a little bit higher number, but I will also say it's not out of the range of, you know, what we thought and our fisheries folks thought was reasonable.
Okay. All right, and I thought that's what you probably were going to say. And no disrespect, but there's a lot of anglers out there that spent thousands of hours on a lake in the last 15 years. My brother's one, and many, many other famous anglers who don't agree at all with the way the DNR does the census, with the model that they use. And I know you're aware of that, Sarah. I'm not knocking you personally. I don't think Mille Lacs is ever going to be solved unless we find a way to either redo the census on the lake, redo it, figure out, make sure that we're right. But there's too many people that really, truly believe there's a harvestable way higher than the poundage that we're currently harvesting at, and that's a big problem.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you that the challenge is in the gap between what people are experiencing and what they believe and what our surveys and population data say. That gap is the crux of the conflict and the misunderstanding there. You know, what I can say is I have confidence in our fisheries biologists. They're incredibly you know, dedicated in their profession. They're incredibly smart. They have managed a lot of fisheries resources. Our mm-hmm. models have been reviewed by outside experts. That isn't to say that what people are experiencing on the lake isn't true either. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm just one of those people that right. I believe yeah. both of those things can be true, but that difference is what creates some of the conflict. Right. The other really big challenge with Mille Lacs is the pressure that it gets. So even if we had a little bit higher number, you know, it wouldn't necessarily dramatically change the regulation we could offer there, because the pressure on the lake is so high that it really just doesn't take very long to mount up the harvest and the walleye kill there. So that's another real challenge that we have in managing the lake.
Yeah, and the other challenge is a lot of us don't like the way we do the kill, the catch and release, and we, you know, we guess how many walleyes are actually killed. So there's a lot more problems, Sarah, than you're really aware of, because you actually, I can't expect you to do more than you're doing. Don't get me wrong, okay? It's just that we don't believe, most of us don't believe anymore that the people in the field, there's not enough fishermen in the DNR. They're sitting behind the desk. I don't care about your science. We're tired of it. It's a political issue, damn it. That's what we all believe. We believe we should be able to take two walleyes, that we will not fish the lake down. If the fish aren't there, we just won't go. They'll come back by themselves. That's what most of us believe. So it's a big problem. And we also don't believe one group of people should be able to harvest more fish than another group of people. And it's getting worse in this country day after day, politically, whatever. Don't blame the DNR for it. But I don't think you're exactly right as far as what you think can be harvestable. And we're worried that you're going to go the way the ban says. That's what most people think.
Yeah, what I will tell you is that process, as it was designed, is a conversation between fisheries biologists and, you know, mm-hmm. like any science, there are different opinions among different scientists. There isn't one answer that gets spit out. So those conversations between the state mm-hmm. fisheries biologists and the ban biologists are really conversations about the data that we have, what they think that means for the population as a whole, and where they think that means the lake is headed. And so there clearly are some differences in perspectives, and that's the process that works it out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is not a political process. It may have been at, you know, various points, but I mean, you know, I had conversations with our fisheries folks, and it's very important to me that they mm-hmm. feel comfortable from a biological standpoint that we are managing the lake in a responsible way.
Well, yes, I know. All right. We've heard the same tune, and I'm not disagreeing with you personally. I'm just saying we've heard it for 20-some years now, and it never changes. We're never going to be able to eat walleyes out of Lake Mille Lacs. That's all I'm saying, and something has to change. And you would be the greatest hero the DNR ever had, by the way, if you personally could maybe wave a magic wand, and I know you can't, Sarah. I know that.
Yeah, well, this job doesn't come with any magic wands, and I think, I mean, you know, this is an example of one of those issues where there are different perspectives on it, and you know, we have to work through those, and not everybody's going to see it the same way. That's
it.
You know, the way it is.
Mark,
go ahead, Tommy.
I got, you know, I mean, just to get away from that a little bit, Commissioner, you know, you got the legislative people are meeting now, and there's been a few things talked about that are probably going to come up. I know Senator Root from Brainerd is she's going to try to introduce a four walleye limit mm-hmm. and so the two line bill. And I just wanted to get maybe a perspective from you. And I know you can't always just say how you feel about it, but maybe from the department side of it, is there an opinion out there that might be able to, you know, just to tell people what the department might be looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think with respect to the four walleye bill, I mean, as you all know, that's an issue that's been talked about for a number of years and looked at. And you know, there are some differences of opinion there as mm-hmm. well, but I think there seems to be a growing consensus that four walleye is an appropriate bag limit. And the reality is from our perspective, is it is more of a social issue than a biological issue. And what I mean by that is that according to the information we have, our creel data, very few anglers are actually harvesting more than four walleye. So, you know, we're not seeing people taking six walleye as a regular habit. And so dropping it to four isn't really having a biological effect or really an effect on those people that aren't keeping them anyway. Okay. I think that the concerns that we've heard are from a few of the resorts, a few folks who may worry about a possession limit dropping. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think those are issues that can be worked out in the discussion.
But a lot of the large lakes right now have a four-walleye limit, correct?
Exactly, yeah. Most of the large lakes already have a four-walleye limit, so nothing really would change there.
At times it's kind of a mute point, because if their businesses are all doing very, very well, like on Leech and Vermilion, all across the board, Lake of the Woods, if their businesses are doing well and it's a four fish limit, there must be something that they're not declining in their business. Their business models are good. It's just a point of perception by lots of different people, whether it's just anglers or the tourism side of it. But, you know, it's something, you know, it's something that's been worked on and brought up for about 4 to 5 years now. And hopefully it's going to move in a direction that we hope will be, you know, solidly accepted by the public.
You know, another one that's obviously to the forefront is the two-line discussion that's been talked about and thrown around for quite a few years. And, you know, obviously there's two lines in ice fishing, and there's that side of the story then how that applies to open water. But what's the likelihood of this getting through, Commissioner? And is there, what kind of light does the DNR shed on this topic?
Yeah, well, I am not going to tell you what the likelihood is of it getting through the legislature, but you know, obviously it's been discussed in a number of years, and we have you know, consistently expressed some concerns about it in the way that it's come forward. You know, one from a sustainability standpoint, and you know, is it really needed? I mean, I know people sort of hear anecdotally that people may go elsewhere because we don't have two lines here. I think, you know, whether or not that's the case is hard to verify. But I think the concern is, you know, the more lines in the water, even if the limit stays the same, you have the potential for more hooking mortality, that kind of thing. And so, you know, the other aspect is the enforcement, and depending on how it's structured, does it make life more complicated for our enforcement officers? So those are some of the issues. I know there was some conversation about this at the DNR roundtable in the fisheries forward session that Tom, you hosted, and I actually thought it was a really interesting discussion, because I think, you know, there were certainly a few folks who were proponents of the two-line idea, and other folks sort of asking what's the need for it, you know, and does it benefit the fishery? And if it doesn't benefit the fishery, should we do it? Maybe we should think about whether it's a good idea in ice season, or just because we do it in the ice season doesn't mean we should do it open water. And so I think there's still a pretty robust debate going on among anglers.
Yep, there is. You know, and I think it's hard to get a consensus amongst anglers, whether you ice fish or not. It's just... yeah, it's a never-ending conversation. Tommy, what other things, you know, came up at the roundtable that, you know, obviously we have the buzzword, you know, things going on with CWD and AIS, but special regs and bluegills, that one keeps rising to the surface.
It was a tremendous thing, and it's been going, you know, we've been talking about this for several years. In fact, I have a leech weight meeting on Tuesday. They've been talking about doing something on the regulation of big panfish. They want to try to conserve some of the big panfish. And I think Mike Diener from Linder Media is a great guy and talking about that. And with his, he's in that panfish group. And, you know, I think that they're putting special regs on a few more lakes next year. And, you know, it's just, I think it's something that everybody thinks, they don't think about panfish. They think of, you know, the water will always be there. Well, I'm going to tell you, the big bluegill, panfish stuff, there's a reason why they want to, you know, tone back the limit a little bit on crappies and bluegills, because of the fact you want to conserve some of those larger fish. And genetically, you know, if you take all the big fish out, then all you're going to have is small fish. And all three of us have fished enough all over the country to know that that is a real thing. So it's something moving in the right direction. There's still a lot of conversation about it, but there definitely is the interest in it.
I want to point something out about the bluegills. The big bluegills that we're worried about, the big male bluegills, are folks that don't know, okay? They're better at protecting the nests. And so if you harvest them big bluegills, the big 10-inchers, whatever, you are allowing the smaller panfish who are not as good at that, and pretty soon all the big males that do the best job guarding the nest are gone, and then you have tons of small bluegills, and that's exactly what happens. Mm-hmm. That's the reason you don't take them, because you'll lose a whole genetic line of nest protectors. It's pretty simple when you think about it.
Yep. The big guys on the block, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, basically, that's what it is.
Yeah. But this is going to be an interesting conversation, because, you know, I think most anglers are really for it, Commissioner, and I think when you look about, you know, starting out, as I read in Outdoor News, you know, there's been discussion about taking 100 lakes or whatever, and I'm sure you're going to get a lot of valued input as far as where to start, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, we know there's interest out there. So, you know, I think this approach to start with some of those lakes who are ready and then to continue to grow from there makes a lot of sense.
Good deal.
I got one question.
Go ahead.
You know, the youth hunt was something that was really, really well thought of for this year. I know there's been a lot of talk about it. What is your position and what is your thought process on the youth hunt? So that would be an earlier season.
I couldn't hear the question. I'm sorry.
Okay, try it again, Tom.
The youth hunt.
Yeah, you mm-hmm. know, that was something I found really interesting because, you know, we've had the youth deer hunt in the past. It's been geographically limited. There's been a lot of interest in moving that statewide. We did that last year. It was incredibly successful. A lot of people took advantage of it. A lot of kids had a successful hunt. And, you know, again, back to that example of there's people equally passionate on all sides of an issue.
Oh, yeah.
We heard from a number of folks who were concerned about it. And so, you know, that was a bit of a surprise, at least to me personally. I don't know if it was to other folks.
Commissioner, I'd like to make a comment really quick before I lose you. All right. 25% of those kids have 75% of the kids they took already had hunted deer. So what a lot of us are concerned about is the fact that people are taking kids out for different reasons. A lot of us believe that if only kids could go out that haven't previously hunted, that would lessen the pressure. It would irritate more hunters. Only kids who have never hunted before should be taken out. How about that idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of different schools of thought when it comes to how do we get more kids engaged in the outdoors, and mm-hmm. you know, that's one of them. You focus on the kids who have never done it before.
Right.
You know, some folks though are concerned about you do it once, and is it successful? Is it not successful? Does it take more than, you know, one time being out? And so I think there are other schools of thought that say, you know, it's that whole experience, and you want to get kids in the habit of doing it a number of years and make sure that that the parents or friends or whoever's taking those kids out are really focused on the experience of the kids and not having to focus on their own hunt and a youth hunt. So, you know, there's different opinions on that. And I think, you know, as we all have this goal of recruiting another generation, mm-hmm. we need to keep looking at these issues, and we need to try different things, and we need to understand what's working and maybe what doesn't work.
Yeah. You know, I think I'll speak for myself, but an advocate for you need to take an individual out multiple times to really get it seated, because we've, you know, Laren, myself, and I'm sure Tommy's done it also, where we've taken youngsters out fishing for a day and done the same thing the following year and the following year after that. And you realize, talking with some of the kids that you have had in the past previous years, you find out that the only time they got to go fish was this particular event.
Exactly.
And it's really sad because there's nobody else to take them. So they really look forward to it. And that's kind of what we want to do. So it's really a precarious situation. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, that's a big goal of ours. And it's, I mean, kids are one piece of it. But, you know, we want to make sure that everyone in Minnesota has access to the outdoors and outdoor experiences. And so, you know, we're going to be trying some different things and reaching out to some different folks in that effort to help folks establish whatever connection they want to establish. But I think it does take, you know, that access and that opportunity and, mm-hmm. and being able to do it more than once.
Well, another quick, how much time we got left here?
Well, go ahead. We've got just a couple minutes.
I was just wondering, one of the things over the years that Buck, Mark, and I have talked about a lot of times for 25 years is there just never seem to have enough conservation officers. How is that going? I mean, are we at par or are we below par? I mean, every time I turn around, we're training somebody.
Which is great. We need more conservation officers.
We never get full.
Right. Well, the reality is you train some and you bring new ones in and others reach retirement age. So and that's right. You know, that's just the way our demographics are playing out right now in the state workforce, and conservation officers are no exception to that. So I think you will continue to see us recruiting and training new folks. But you know, our enforcement crew does a really great job of recruiting and training. Those academies have been really successful, and so we're gonna keep a focus on that. It's really important, and you know, those conservation officers are a great way to connect with people who are out and about enjoying the outdoors.
I think the point I'm making is we need more. In other words, has anybody gone to the? Can we? Is there a way to get more conservation officers? Raise the limits.
Well, only 100? Every 2 years we have a budget for the DNR, and that's part of the budget. So, that's in that mix and that conversation. So this year will not be a budget year. We had that last year, and so we'll focus again on the budget next year. This year we're really focused on the bonding bill, the capital investments, and so there's a lot of really good infrastructure investments that we're hoping to make this year.
Well, before we let you go, and by the way, we thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on a Sunday night and taking time away from the family. But as you look back over a year's period of time and looking ahead, what seem to be a couple of the biggest concerns lying ahead for you? As far as trying to get off center and maybe make a little more progress?
Well, clearly, you've mentioned chronic wasting disease a couple of times. Yeah. That continues to be a really urgent need for our attention. We're going to continue to be aggressive and proactive in our response. But, you know, obviously the disease is persisting in the southeast, so we're going to continue to work on containment there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we see it pop up in more deer farms this year. And so that's going to increase the need for us to do surveillance and wild deer surrounding those farms. Fortunately, we did not find any more wild in Crow Wing County this year. But, we're going to stay really focused on that because it's just too important to not pay attention to that and not be proactive. So that's certainly one thing. And then, immediately we're really going to focus on the bonding and our asset preservation. We own a lot of land, a lot of assets, a lot of buildings, a lot of facilities, a lot of infrastructure that we manage that ensures the public can get out and use the facilities and the land in the ways that they are accustomed to. And so we need to make some investments in those capital assets. And so we're going to be really focused on making that case this session at the legislature. And then just longer term, it's really focusing on how do we connect people to the outdoors and how do we get that next generation that cares about our natural resources and has a personal connection to our natural resources. It's incredibly important from a funding standpoint because we are funded primarily through, user fee kinds of methods, and it's really important politically, so that we have people who care and are engaged in these issues. So we're gonna continue to focus on that issues, and you'll see some new initiatives coming out in the next several years during our time here.
Wonderful, Tommy, Larry.
Well, I just Commissioner, don't get any more gray hair now, and you're doing a good job. I really mean that. You've been all over. You're really concerned. I still think Mille Lacs is a political issue. We'll disagree on that, but thanks for coming on.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Thank you.
Tommy had something to say, too, I think.
Tom, go ahead.
Well, you know, here's the thing is, Commissioner Stroman has shown the passion and the commitment to the people of Minnesota by traveling all over the state. I mean, I've been around, you know, quite a few different commissioners. They've done a great job. They're their own personality, but she brings her own personality. And I think when the people of Minnesota understand what she's trying to do and accomplish, they'll rally around her in the future now and in the future. So I take my hat off to her because she really, she gets it. And that's kind of a version of what we say as anglers. We say that person gets it.
Yep.
She gets it.
Well, we thank you for coming on, Commissioner, and we support you, and best of luck through the year, and keep us posted.
Absolutely. Thank you so much again, and I'll look forward to our next conversation.
Sounds good. Thank you for being
good
on.
Good night, Commissioner.
Good night.
All right, thank you. Good night.
Commissioner Sarah Stroman from the DNR, good conversation. Tommy, do you want to hang on a little bit, or you?
Yeah, I want to hang on till after your break because I got two questions for Larry, and it's going to surprise him.
All right, we're going to take a short, we might as well take a pause right now, Brandon. All right. We're going to go for a break right now, folks. Bear Facts and Fishtails, Mark and Larry, stand by. We'll take a short break.
A night full of the important stuff. Bob Outdoors keeps trolling along with more Bear Facts and Fishtails next. The Bob FM Chillin' and Grillin' Giveaway is your opportunity to win a brand new Traeger grill from the Blaine VFW. Just submit a picture of you chillin' and grillin' in Bob Country by February 20th. Get full rules and submit your picture online at mybobcountry.com. It's the Bob FM Chillin' and Grillin' Giveaway.
The Minnesota Weapons Collectors Association has been promoting safe, responsible firearms ownership since 1954. Don't miss the MWCA Gun Show at the St. Paul River Center Saturday and Sunday, February 22nd and 23rd. Showtimes are from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Sunday. Dozens of vendors and tables. Buy, sell, or trade firearms, accessories, and collectibles. Admission is $7, 12 and under free. Under 18 must be with a parent or responsible adult. For more information, check out the MWCA Facebook page or visit MWCA.org.
Here's Bowling for Frankie's.
Number one ranger dealer in the world, my buddy Frank DeSanko up there in beautiful Chisago City, Minnesota. How do you get to be number one? Well, you must always, almost always, you're always there giving the best prices. You sell ranger boats made out of aluminum and fiberglass, even pontoons. Maybe you just need an outboard motor. It doesn't matter. You will get the best price in town. That has a lot to do with why he's number one. Now, if you're going to buy a boat and they don't give them away, you need to know that it'll be rigged professionally. Joe and Bud are his sons. They're the head wing nuts in the back room. They've been rigging boats since they were 15, 16 years old and repairing outboard motors. They have an 8-stall service center to get you in. They have a new showroom to see everything's on display. And if you are going to order a new boat, you got to pick out the colors. Opening day is like May 14th or 15th. You want to get it done right now. Drive on up or call Frankie's at 651-257-6334 or go online at frankies.net.
The ice will melt soon. Get out and fish in a premium sleeper ice house from Minnesota Recreation Rentals. Select premium ice houses are available on Brainerd Area Lakes for just $175 a night, Sunday through Thursday, or on weekends, buy two nights at a third for half price. Take advantage of these low prices now. Limited availability. Reserve now at icefishmn.com. For best availability and these special rates, reserve now at icefishmn.com.
To all military veterans, please stop by the Spectacle Shop when you need prescription glasses and receive half off your eyewear. Not just your eyewear, we'll also take half off prescription glasses purchased by immediate family members. The Spectacle Shop is in Uptown Minneapolis, Grand and Lexington in St. Paul, and on Silver Lake Road in New Brighton. The Spectacle Shop is owned by a veteran who would like to say thank you to all military veterans.
The best showcase of Minnesota Bucks under one roof is back. The Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic is coming March 13th, 14th, and 15th to Canterbury Park in Shakopee. See Michael Waddell and Nick Munt from TV's Bone Collector. Get your antlers scored and visit with over 150 exhibitors. Plus, there's the Wild Trails Kid Zone. Parking is free at the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic. Now at the new location, Canterbury Park in Shakopee. March 13th, 14th, and 15th. Learn more at mndeerclassic.com. That's mndeerclassic.com.
IceFishMN.com wants to remind you that you can still ice fish in one of their premium sleeper ice houses in the Brainerd Lakes area. Reserve now at IceFishMN.com. You can still ice fish in Minnesota with IceFishMN.com.
Dreaming of a new home? The State Bank of Faribault can help with a $7,500 grant. For a limited time, qualified borrowers might be eligible for a up to $7,500 grant towards costs of the purchase of a new home with State Bank of Faribault. Find out if you're eligible. Talk with the mortgage team at one of their two locations in Faribault or their new location in Prior Lake. The State Bank of Faribault, creating customers for life. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. NMLS number 638054. This is not an offer to enter into a rate lock agreement.